We now broadcast the ninth episode, or chapter, in our ongoing historical series, where we look at the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican throughout the centuries. The programme is written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett, and we are running an episode each Saturday. Today's episode is called Between Two Epochs and focuses on the figure of Pope Gregory the Great, who introduced plain chant and did much to help the poor and needy.
The last Western emperor had been deposed and the imperial insignia sent to Constantinople. Italy was under the barbarians.
From the Ostrogoths it was won back briefly by the Byzantine government, but then it fell again, this time to the Lombards, who held sway for nearly two centuries.
In that time they managed to dismember the unity of the country and retard its development. But while Roman civilization had crumbled, a new power had been growing in its place.
That power was the papacy.
During the reign of Pope Symmachus, from 498 to 551, the stairs and atrium of the Vatican Basilica were brought to completion, and the rotunda was dedicated to St. Andrew. Symmachus also placed walls with projecting roofs at the two extremities of the steps to protect the pilgrims from the burning sun as they ascended the steps on their knees.
Pope Gregory the Great, who reigned from 590 to 604, gave new impetus and fervour to the liturgy and carried out an important liturgical adaptation in St. Peter's. During the Vatican excavations in the 1940s, it was discovered that Constantine had not actually built an altar, he'd simply placed his monument over Peter's tomb.
Since a permanent altar was an indispensable element in Christian basilicas, Pope Gregory attempted to resolve the problem by raising the presbytery floor so that the upper part of the monument could be used as an altar. Below this, he built a crypt so that pilgrims could still approach the tomb. This they did by walking through a curved gallery, following the walls of the apse, and then walking through another on their way out.
The galleries were extended from the centre of the apse to the back of Constantine's monument. Later on, another altar was placed in the crypt for liturgical celebrations.
Gregory also brought new life to the basilica by starting a school of cantors. He wanted to form musicians who, through the universal language of music, would help him to spread Christianity outside Italy, in countries where Latin was not spoken. One of the centres of the school was under the steps of St. Peter's, the other was under the building of the Lateran. For a long time, various relics of this school were preserved at the Lateran. One of these was the couch on which Gregory rested as he sang, another the whip which he brandished at inattentive choir boys.
Gregory collected all the most beautiful Christian songs into an antiphonary. He then attached this with a golden chain to the chair of Peter.
Gregory was responsible for regulating the services and ritual of the church, and his reform and standardization of plain chant made his name a household word. He raised church music to a level it had never before known, and to this day, Gregorian chant can be heard in Benedictine monasteries all over the world.
Gregory the Great was born in Rome about 540 of a noble Roman family. As a young man, he went into civil administration, and by his early 30s was already prefect of Rome. But on his father's death, Gregory distributed a third of his wealth to the poor, and with the rest he founded six monasteries. He turned his own house into a monastery, and his mother, Sylvia, lived in a cell nearby and grew vegetables for the monks.
It was while he was a monk there on the Caelian Hill that Gregory took a walk one day through the Forum and saw the fair-haired English boys for sale as slaves. Not angles, but angels, was the historic remark of Gregory's, to become so well known to every English schoolchild. One of Gregory's fellow monks was that same Augustine, whom he was to send years later to convert the English.
To this day, much of Gregory's monastery can still be seen, including a legendary table at which, we're told, the saint used to serve daily 12 poor men, and on one occasion, 13. The extra guest was a visiting angel.
But Gregory was not to enjoy the contemplative life for long. In 579, Pope Pelagius II sent him as papal nuncio to Constantinople. And when Pelagius died in the year 590, Gregory was unanimously elected his successor. He was most reluctant to accept, but the people acclaimed him, and the emperor confirmed the choice. It was to prove a wise one.
Gregory was a man of wide vision and great practical ability. He played a leading part in the Christianization of Europe, reconciled Spain to the faith, and abolished simony among the clergy of Gaul. In Italy, he worked for the conversion of the Lombards, who were Arians, and the year before he died, he was rewarded when they capitulated en masse to the Catholic faith. But together with his missionary zeal, Gregory possessed a high sense of justice, and under his pontificate, the Jews were protected from persecution.
Gregory's time was a very unhappy period for Rome, and it was generally thought that the end of the world was not far off. The city itself was decimated by the bubonic plague. Pelagius had died of it. Gregory took action before he was even consecrated pope. He ordered 40 processions to make their way through the city to intercede for God's help.
Men and women, priests and children, marched through the streets, many of them falling dead by the wayside. Just as the pope was about to enter St. Peter's, he saw a vision of the Archangel Michael on the summit of Hadrian's tomb. The angel was in the act of sheathing his sword. From that moment, the pestilence ceased. A chapel was built on the spot where the angel had appeared, and from that day the tomb was known as Castel Sant'Angelo, or the Castle of the Holy Angel.
Although Pope Gregory had taken for himself the title Servant of the Servants of God, a title to be adopted by all future popes, he lived at a time when the pope was not allowed to be only the Bishop of Rome, a pastor of souls. He was expected to be civil administrator and general of the troops. The church built hospitals, orphanages, homes. Daily the pope distributed bread to the starving masses. To the poor and sick he sent food to the door. To the impoverished nobles he gave wine, grain and vegetables. Gregory took particular interest in the conditions of the peasants, who were literally slaves of the soil, and helped to free them from this dependence.
The city was still in a bad way, for the plague had been followed by famine, and the famine by a storm that had blown down trees, houses and churches. Last of all came the Lombards, and once again it was the Pope who had to make peace with the invader. Gregory the Great has been described as the last of the Roman popes and the first of the medieval popes. Certainly his stature is such that the image of Gregory as a bridge between two epochs is not too far from the truth. When he died, they wrote on his tomb, "The Consul of God."
Gregory the Great was the most prolific writer and left many homilies, letters, and the history of his pontificate in 14 books. His writings are important sources for church and profane history of the time.
The times are very sad. The fields desolate and deserted, the cities empty. The Senate is dead, the people no longer exist. The sword hangs over the heads of those who are left. We are in the midst of the ruin of the world.
The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett.